Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Jedi.Tax Radio, Episode 3. Today is September 6th, 2020. For those of you looking at this or viewing this in the future, you'll understand why that harump just happened. Much to my shock, it's September already, but we're having a minor, tiny disaster here. The AC is out. I am in the office. But the portable AC is operating, and it's 98 degrees at 8 p.m. Pacific time. Go figure. So I'm fortunate. I have some air on its way, but it is what it is. I do want to welcome everyone who's listening both live and later on, of course, in the archive. Thank you for joining us. As you know, we are on blogtalkradio.com, and we are also on Facebook. We have our YouTube page as well. We ask you to give us likes on our YouTube page, please. You can find it through our Jedi.Tax page. And if you're viewing this on YouTube, please, we need to get to 100 likes. Once we get to 100 likes, we can go ahead and manipulate our account with YouTube. So we're going to get to it. As I do mention previously, or just a few moments ago, this is now our third episode. So thank you for joining us. We're going to begin over the next 6 episodes going over federal income tax return. Every now and then we'll throw in a state or two, depending on the complexity, but we're generally going to stick with the federal stuff here. And of course, we are looking at the 2019 tax year. hotel, and that's the one that we're actually preparing right now. We're in 2020, so that won't be in effect until January 1st of 2021. So as I tend to tell my clients, I live in the past, and I really do when I'm preparing tax returns. So once you're able to get that concept, whereas you are in 2021, I am in 2020. Not a back to the future theme, it's a tax law theme. So as I tell people, when you mean today, I mean the year that we're working on. If you mean what's going on next year, then we use dates. But that gives you an idea. I don't know if I've mentioned, but tax preparers do have their own language. There's no doubt about it. We speak very fast because we've been doing this. I have more than 33 years of experience. I want to thank my uncle, Prudenciano Santana. He is still preparing taxes as far as I know, and he is the one, when I was 18, sent me to H&R Block. I have no qualms saying it. Many of us who are in the tax field started with H&R Block. Indispensable experience. It is one of my greatest regrets. As an 18-year-old, I was offered full-time in the off-season. As an 18-year-old, I wonder what could have been. But it doesn't matter. I am where I am now. I think I did announce my name. My name is Rogelio Noriega. As I mentioned, I have 33 years experience. You can check out my registration and any other legal tax repair, both at the IRS website and the state of you, whoever, wherever you're watching. Now, there are some states that have no requirements whatsoever. But I know that there are 5 states that require education, bonding, stuff like that. So California is one of them. That's where we operate out of. New York is another. And, oh, my goodness, I should know this. I was only telling a few other people about this. But let me give you an example. In Texas, you only need a P-10. In Arizona, we, as a matter of fact, are going through that process right now because we're looking to open up 1, maybe 2 digital offices in Arizona. As you know, we have one now in Texas, and we have one in New York, as well as several here in California. So Jedi Out Tax is growing. If you are interested in learning how to prepare income taxes, well, just go to Jedi.tax and drop us a line. You can find us at the aforementioned website, Jedi.tax. You can also find us at twitter.com/ the IRS man. Yep, I have that one. I've had it forever. But it says Jedi.tax on it, so you'll know it's us. And we're on Facebook, Jedi.tax. No, Jedi Tax. There's no dot. So Facebook.com/ Jedi Tax. If you have any questions, you can go ahead and leave them right there in the chat room, either on Blog Talk Radio or on our Facebook Live feed. We are doing Facebook. I am not real good on being able to see who is in the chat room. But Anna Marie Madrid, thank you. Good evening, Anna Marie. The Madrids, I hope you guys are doing well. They're overseas, so this is cool. I have an overseas audience. But anyway, right now is, as I mentioned, this is the first of 6 sessions on the first of the month where I'm going to be talking about the structure of the tax return. If you want to think about the tax return, the federal 1040, we're not talking 990s, 1065s, or any of the others. I think there might be a 1045 in there too, but numbers are elusive right now. Anyway, the federal tax form can be divided into 6 sections. 6. I don't know if this is in reverse or whatever, but it's 6. And we're going to be taking the first part of it today. I call it the who, what, and with section of the tax return. So, to give you an idea, the 6 parts of the tax return are this: the who, what, and with, etc. The second part is income, all sorts of income, and I'm going to give you a teaser on what's coming next month. Income, salary, wages, interest, dividends, savings bonds, investment vehicles, CDs, money market accounts, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, lots of things. You also have self-employment income where you are working for yourself. You might be a contractor. We will get to that when we review Schedule C. We may have, actually, we may do a special one on Schedule C and on Schedule E as well, which is a rental. But it also is other sorts of investment income. Schedule E is generally rental properties, but if you're earning monies from, say, oil leases and stuff like that and intellectual property, you report that on Schedule E. So Schedule A is a deduction, which we will handle in the fourth class. I think that one's going to be in December. Episode. Schedule B is interest and dividends. That is one we're going to handle next week. Schedule C is self-employment income next week. Schedule D, generally that's sale of capital assets, a house, stocks, bonds, stuff like that. Sales and losses and stuff like that. That will be next week as well. E will be next week as well, as I mentioned, intellectual property, rental properties. A form I've never done is Schedule F, which is a farm return. I got close, very close to earning one a few years ago, but didn't happen yet. I do have a client that does own a farm, but they're self-employed and they're going to go to a corporation, so I will not be preparing Schedule F. Got close. They are my clients. And they're doing very well. They own a store, two stores, I believe, and a farm, an organic farm. So it's really kind of cool. They control the whole thing. But I'm all over the place. So the first one is who, with, how. Second one is income. The third part of a tax return is adjustments. That's usually at the bottom of the page if you're imagining the 1040 return, where you get to make little adjustments to your income, basically. That's what it is. If you have, say you took out money out of your CD early and you got penalized, you can probably deduct it there. That's an adjustment to your income. And I know alimony is grandfathered in for certain people, and that's where you report it. So adjustments is a very small section, but there's a lot to it. After that, it's deductions, as I mentioned. That one will be in December. In January, we're going to be talking about credits and taxes, the child tax credit, the child care credit, the educational credit. There's incredible facets to the educational credit. It's amazing. Well, actually, to all the credits. There are many others, senior credit, disability credit, senior and disability, I believe it is. We use Schedule R for that one, but I'm all over the place. And then finally, the last part, which will be in February, the first week in February, is refund or amount due. So that's what we're looking at moving forward. For now, I just want to welcome Thomas. Thank you for joining us, Thomas. And I do appreciate it. Once again, I ask you to head on over to our YouTube page. You do it through the bottom of the page on Jedi.tax. There's a little YouTube symbol. Go there. Please subscribe so we can get to 100. And once we get to 100, we'll be able to manipulate the account. So forgive me, I'm going to have to use my extra mile cup. It's very hot. And this was full of ice. There's just little spigots or little pieces of ice left over. So part of the tax return basically is who, with, and how, basically. Generally, it's you. We're looking at a 1040. We're not looking at a partnership return. We're not looking at a corporation. We're looking at an individual, which is you. And really, people always ask, who must file a return? Well, there are certain requirements such as age and the amount of money that you earn and the type of money that you earn. That's where it can get complex. But if the general requirements are met, everyone who must file a return, be a citizen and or a resident of the U.S., or a resident of Puerto Rico. And again, as I mentioned, it's based on your gross income, your filing status, and your age. The reason why, if you are married, filing joint, your deduction is much greater than a single person. Duh. A single person has a deduction, I believe, of $12,200 or so. I'll have to check that real quick. So basically, if you're under 60, if you're over 18, under 65, and you're filing on your own, no one else supports you. We'll get into the whole support thing when we talk about dependents. Oh, and I do want to remind everyone, I'm not your attorney, and I'm not your financial planner. So take this for what it is. If you are my client, that's a whole other thing. You speak to me. You go over that stuff. But as far as this, I'm not advising you. I am helping you. So if you want clarity and you want to understand more, you need to contact me. This is a self-help. There is more to it. I'm just giving you, like, the little waves that break on the beach, yet there's a whole ocean out there. So that's kind of the idea. If you are single, between the ages of 18 and 65, and you have no dependents, if you earn less than $12,200 in salary, earning from a regular job, you do not have to file. We'll say $12,199. If you are at $12,200, you have to file. Why that number? Because you have a standard deduction, and we're going to get into the standard deductions in the fourth lesson, which is in December. But a standard deduction is the government's way of saying, okay, you don't have enough to itemize, which is basically what we used to consider a long form. And itemize is this, meaning you can take your expenses, but you've got to itemize them. And what are expenses that are deductible? Well, looking at the form, you have medical expenses. But the way the government works, there's a little minimum that you have to get over to begin to deduct, and it's based on your income. It's 7.5% of your income. So if you earn $10,000, you have to have 7.5%, $750. Yeah, that's about right. $750 of medical expenses to begin to report. So if you have $800 on the Schedule A, you get to deduct $50, because it's $750 to $800. $50. In addition to those medical expenses, which are prescription medication, you know, I'm already getting into it right now, so I'm going to be all over the place. Prescription medication, you have your doctor visits, the miles to and from the doctor, x-rays, hospitals, lab work, surgery, stuff like that, all those things are deductible. The mileage rate, I don't recall what it is right now. I know they upped it. I forget what's the difference between charity and medical miles. 33 years, you don't remember everything. But I guess I should have had that. Then you have on your state taxes, if you have state taxes, such as sales tax or the withholding from your check, your DMV fees, what you pay in your license fees on your car, property taxes. You can also deduct your mortgage, interest. You can deduct points, and the points are reasonable and ordinary for your area. The points are what you pay to acquire the loan, and they're listed on your good faith final estimate. And sometimes they're actually listed on the 1098 as well, which kind of makes it easy for everyone. But mortgage insurance premiums are deductible at certain times of the year. There are things that have happened, and there are gaps. Ask us. It's too complex to explain that part of it right now. But the points that you pay, and you have to pay them for them to be deductible. If you do not pay, such as in a refinance, and you have refinance costs, fees, and stuff like that, you've got to take it over the life of the loan. So if you refinance a loan, it's a 30-year loan, whatever your cost for the refinance, it's going to be, say it's $1,000. Yeah, right, 30 years. Or if you have one of those Quicken loans, it'll be 15 years, whatever, not much. But if you pay it up front, you put a down payment, you can deduct those expenses in your first year. Now, there is something you want to consider, whether you're single or married. Buying a house, oh, and the agents love to tell you, Oh, everything's deductible. Liars. They're all liars because they say everything's deductible. It's not. Quite a bit of it is, but not all of it. So we have to be the bad guys because some other guys, oh, it's all deductible. They don't know anything about taxes, mind you. They're selling houses, but they know everything's deductible, of course, to make you happy. It's not. You have to speak to a professional. So you can speak to unenrolled agents. They're very sharp. I'm hoping to have some enrolled agents join us in the future and other preparers around the United States. I'm looking forward to doing this in the future, but we'll see. I definitely got way off track on that one. Enrolled agents, yes. My credentials are I'm a certified or a California registered tax preparer, CRTP. It means I'm licensed and I'm bonded. So it's an important thing. Other states don't require that, but you'll have to check with the states to find out what the requirements are. Some of them don't. But everyone who prepares income taxes must have a federal P-10. That's important. And the letter, the number starts with a P. And the more zeros they have in front of it, the longer they've been doing taxes. I have several zeros in front of my number, but that's neither here nor there. It doesn't mean anything other than I've been around for a long time. 33 years. Had to throw it in there again. You know, size is everything, isn't it? But anyway, if I count all the years, and I probably could get away with it too because I have experience. I was helping my uncle prepare income taxes. Oh, my goodness. Wow, what was it? Back when I was 8, I was his copy machine back in the late 70s. Late 70s, early 80s. To have a photocopy machine in your office in the late 70s, that was a lot of money. So what my uncle would do is he would interview the client, and then he would call me over, and with my penmanship, and people wonder why I have excellent penmanship, my uncle would have me have a blank return and copy the document. And I would have to copy it either once or twice because one was for the client, the other one was to mail, and the other copy was for us. Wow. So I think I had to do it twice. I was good at it. Just copying each thing, and he had to verify, and it was great. I enjoyed doing it. I did my first return when I was 10, which was really cool. So I could say that I have 43 years of experience because I was helping my uncle prepare taxes since I had been 8. Don't get me wrong. He's the one that did it, but I was helping him out. So it's in my blood. There's no doubt about that. But anyway, so moving on, just about my charging speed here. I've got YouTube, which is at one angle, and then I have Facebook Live, which is another, and of course I have it on Blog Talk Radio. So I have the phone line in front, the Galaxy here, and the iPad mini. So I have them all like in steps. Really kind of neat. Obviously, I have to take a picture of it in the future, but for now, anyway. In addition to mortgage and the insurance premiums and all that, points, then you have charitable contributions. And depends on you do have some minor expenses, depending on the type of job that you have. So your union dues, home office expense, mileage, for the vast majority of people, are gone. It doesn't look like they're going to be added for next year or 2019. So for everyone working at home, you have to look at your states for that to get some love at least there. I know in California there is. But you know, we're going to be discussing home offices when we talk about self-employed income and what the requirements are, especially in using your car, your phone, and all that stuff. A little bit of trivia. I have it on good advice from an attorney that if your employer has you use your phone for business in California, they are supposed to compensate you. They're either to give you a phone, pay for a phone service, whatever. You under California law, if you are an employee and you use your phone, it's supposed to be reimbursed by your employer or provided to you. So you need to be very careful on that. That's in California. I'm not going to get into any other states right now, but that's one thing you want to consider. Remember, I'm in California, so I do know a lot of that stuff. So, good to know. And how do I know? An attorney who's a client made it very clear to me. We chuckled because I asked her, hey, so what about your phone? How much you spend on it? And why would that be deductible? I used your phone for business, didn't you? And she said, yes, I do. But under California law, it's supposed to be provided by your employer if you use your phone. And I can see that. I get that. I clearly understand that. Because communicating with you directly with your phone, they're using your phone. This is not calling you to see if you're coming in or to check your schedule or whatever. It's a whole other thing different. This is you having to use your phone for on the job. So we'll get into those expenses later. If you're self-employed, you're a contractor, you can ignore that part. So, well, unless it's in your contract. So anyway, I know I talk with my hands. Sorry. Here it is. I think I've covered deductions already, but it's going to be a lot more detailed in the future. And already 8:27, man. We're already 27 minutes in. I knew these 30-minute episodes weren't going to be enough, so that's why I automatically extended them to an hour. John Connor, 12:35, was with us. Sorry, I missed you in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, but it's all good. On Facebook, Thomas, hello. Thanks for visiting with us. So, like I said, the phones are on top of each other. I really can't see the different screens, so I ask you to bear with me. So, continuing, under the individual for filing requirements, if you're single, your gross income has to be over $12,200. If it's over that, you got to file for salary and regular earnings and stuff like that. If you're self-employed, if you have over $400 in net earnings, you have to file. Forget the $12,200. If you're self-employed, it's $400. Now, I'm jumping ahead. If you are a church employee, it's $108.28. That's crazy. Don't ask me why. I was on the committee to establish the committee that determined whether we were going to change the color of the committee paper. Futurama. Remember that episode, Futurama? Yeah, I'm making that up. I wasn't on the committee. I apologize. It's very hot. The AC is there. Hey, I'm going to give a shout out. Do I have any of my Coke left up? Soda? Ugh, it's hot. Ice is gone. It's getting kind of flat, so forgive me. Depending on your filing status, there's five federal filing statuses. Now, California has another one, and it's joint custody head of household. That one's complex. Thank goodness I've only run across once in my 43 years of experience. I want to get away with that today. On the website, it says 33 years. But for me, but on my website, we do have over 80 years of experience, and that is real. Maria has 22 years of experience. Raul has 20 years of experience as well. So that alone, let's do the math, kids. That's 33, 22, and 20. That alone is 75. And we brought aboard another 8 people. So, yeah, we're going to have over 80 years of experience. That's what that means. It's not a lie, but it goes up exponentially on the number of affairs that we have. So our tax course is going to start next week. So if you're interested in joining us, I'm going to – the 9 sessions. Starting the next Saturday. It's going to go for 6 hours for 9 sessions. So basically 3 in September, 3 in October, and 3 in November. So we kind of skipped some of the holidays. I know Halloween is on October 31st, so we're not going to have a class. I know we're going to have one on October 3rd. Oh, well, here we go. September 12, 1926, October 3, 17, and 24, and then November 7, 14, and 21. So they are going to be recorded. You can be here and or you can use Skype, but you have to talk to us. So anyway, if you are married, filing joint, that is another status. Actually, let me give you the five statuses. I was about to do that. Single, which means you're not married. And I will talk about common law marriage in just a moment. Single, married, filing joint. You know what? I should actually look at the community property states as well. Yes. Need to look that one up. Just so that you guys know. And I believe there it is. They're almost all exclusively on the West Coast. That's crazy. That's crazy. Well, there's one in the North, but I'll have to verify that one. But you have single, married, filing joint, which is you're married and you are filing together. There's another status, married, filing separate. People like to keep their things separate. They do. And sometimes it is advantageous for one if one individual got hit with a huge tax liability and they pay it. It's rare when it works out. 33 years, I've done it once. The first year I was at H&R Block. Beautiful young lady came in. I'll never forget her. Got her name, though. She sat down. As my first year, and she says, I've been instructed to do the return like this. And I flipped out. Why? Married filing separate. No, it's no good. And we worked it out, did the math, and worked out. And they were able to save some money. So I know it can be appropriate. You have to know the entire tax situation, though. If couples are not talking, which does happen quite a bit when it comes to money, unfortunately, it's anyone's guess, but it only takes one to want to file married filing separate. If one files that way, then the other one has to as well. There may be, I'm going to put a little asterisk on that one. You need to speak to me if you want to as to what I was alluding to, but if one files married filing separate, the other one has to file married filing separate. So, because when you prepare the return, it says married filing separate, who's your spouse? Social Security number. Bam, you're done. So, anyway. Then the next one is head of household, which means you could be married, but most likely you're not, and you have a family. Maybe you've lost your spouse. Maybe they ran off. Maybe you're separated, whatever reason. But head of household means that there's really only one of you, and you are taking care of your family. And your family, well, we'll talk about who can qualify you as head of household. Then you have qualifying widower. That's married filing joint, where one spouse passes away and there is still a child involved. The government gets it. And it's in the code that you can still qualify as married filing joint for a few years, 2 years. So, what determines your status? Well, what the registrar recorder says in your state, and you have to consider what time of year it is. Your filing status is always considered what it is on the last day of the year, December 31st. There's no other day, December 31st. If you are married up until noon, just think of argument, on December 30th, and your divorce takes place, it was final on that day, you are now single. Well, divorced, but there's no divorce. It's you are single, even though you were married the entire year. It's what your status is for the entire year. Now, there are others that could be a little bit different, such as head of household. Head of household, if you are married, but you have to live separate and apart for 6 months. So in other words, if you're married and one spouse runs off, which happens from time to time, and you can't locate them, or you're just living apart. You've got to live apart for 6 months, basically July 1st all the way into the end of the month. If you are separate and apart, you both have different homes, and you can prove it, then even though you're married, you can file as head of household. If you're single, you can file as head of household. But it basically has to be the last 6 months. Oh, well, there we go. I just lost my YouTube feed. Okay, so the maximum amount has been reached on YouTube. Okay, so I'm going to have to learn about that. At 36 minutes, I'm probably going to have to use a conventional recorder. Thank you for hanging around with me on this. Qualifying widow, you have to have a dependent. And what is a dependent? We'll get to that in just a few moments. Head of household, you also have a dependent. You have to have a dependent if I head of household. Look, guys, you're a head of household. I get it. And it gets confusing when I say, okay, are you filing as head of household? I say, yeah. But your wife, sir, why are you doing that? Because I'm head of household. Yeah, all right, spooky. Calm down. Head of household is when you're filing without a spouse, basically. So, yeah, that's about it. Yeah, and I think I can get away with that one. Single, separated, stuff like that. So, but you have to speak to a professional to be certain and see if you can qualify. And, you know, it's really amazing when you have people that get married right away and they've been filing as head of household for some time and they figure they can still file as head of household. You guys got married. You're still married. You're living together. There are exceptions to that too. So speak to your preparer, but it's much more difficult. This is a case that I flew apart on. The tax mama, Marie Rosenberg. Man, that woman is sharp. And she knows her stuff. And she's been doing podcasts, unlike I, who do live radio. She has been doing stuff like that for the longest time. And some years ago, a situation came up where you had a married couple, and they filed as head of household. Two separate addresses, two different kids, and they qualified as head of household. They weren't separated, nothing. They just had two different homes, and they filed that way. And, you know, she was talking about that, no way. But the IRS had officially ruled, and they were quoted some time ago, and they were able to file head of household legally. So there are things that have to be met, but I don't want to get any more complex than I already have. So I know I'm already doing that. So the minimum filing requirements for a single person is under 65, $12,200. If you're 65 or older, it jumps to $13,850. That's your gross income. Married filing joint, under 65, both spouses, $24,400. 65 or older, one spouse is $25,700. 65 or older, both spouses, it's $27,000. Married filing separate, any age, $5. You ever heard of that one? It's going to make you holla right now. Married filing separate, any age, if you have gross income of more than $5, you have to file. Period. There you go. I know that one's not nice, but you have to. Head of a household, under 65, $18,350. 65 or older, $20,000. So if you don't have any taxes taken out and you know your situation is that you're not going to get anything back, you don't have to file. But more often than not, if you have a dependent, you got to see a professional. Jedi.tech. Qualifying widower, under 65 is $24,400, which if you think about what married felon joint is, it's the exact same thing, $24,400. And not one or both spouses, it's just 65 or older, it's $25,700, which matches the married felon joint, one 65 or older. There's no two, qualifying widower. So if you are a dependent, and you meet a dependency test, we'll get over that in a moment. Your parents can claim your earnings, but they have to choose that election. It's a very specific thing, and it is in the IRS Publication 17, which we call the Taxpayer Bible. No disrespect, it just is. We just do that. Biblios, a bunch of different chapters. Come on, people. Bible, Biblios. Yes, let's just say I love playing with my lexicon. It was probably incorrect. I think my English teacher is rolling over in her grave right now. Ugh. But if a child's only income is interest and dividends, including capital gain distributions and Alaska permanent fund dividends, the child was under age 19 at the end of 2019 or was a full-time student under age 24 at the end of 2019 and certain other conditions are met, a parent can elect to include the child's income on the parent's return. If this election is made, the child doesn't have to file a return. There's a lot more to it. Parents like to hide investment income, their children. So if the child makes over a certain amount, it used to be 500 years ago. I think it went up to 750. I think it's like 1,000 something now. But, oh, here it is. Single dependents, 1,100. I got it. If you're a single dependent and you're either 65 or older or blind, you must file a return if any of the following. Your unearned income. And unearned income is like dividends, interest earnings, stuff like that. That's unearned income. Earned is wages, salary, tips, stuff like that. Your earned income was more than $12,200, and your gross income was more than the larger of $1,100, or your earned income of up to $11,850 plus $350. You must file a return if any of the following. Yeah, okay. Married dependents. Dependents, yes. Sometimes you have kids that are under age 18 and they're married. You get to claim them, but it depends on how much money. Again, I don't want to super bore you with all the details, but yes, you have to check and see. You must file a return if any of the following apply. $1,100 unearned income, your earned income was $12,200, and your gross income was at least $5, and your spouse files a separate return and itemizes deductions. Your gross income was more than the larger of $1,100 or $11,850 plus $350. So, actually, that was no, and it's all less than that. Remember that. So, you must file a return if your unearned income was $2,400, of course, if you're filing together, older and blind, other stuff. So, you just got to check the numbers. So, other situation when you must file a return, you owe any special taxes, including alternative minimum tax. That was a tax that was designed a long time ago to make sure that everyone would pay. They're like, hey, you got all these deductions, but sorry, alternative minimum. Actually, this will excite a certain group of the political body, the body politic. Alternative minimum tax. Additional tax on qualified plan, retirement, household employment taxes, Social Security and Medicare tax on tips that you didn't report, write-in taxes, such as including uncollected Social Security and Medicare or RRTA tax on tips, recapture taxes. There's a health savings account involved, an Archer MSA, Medicare Advantage MSA distributions. You had net earnings, some employment, again, of $400. You had wages of $108.28 from a church or qualified church-controlled organization that is exempt from employer Social Security and Medicare taxes, etc. There's more. So, with your return, go to irs.gov free file, VITA, irs.gov VITA, and TCE. I am a paid professional. I'm telling you about it. That's about it. If you use a tax professional, make sure you get a receipt. Make sure they sign. Depends on the state, but if you're filing a federal tax return and you're being paid for it, you have to have a P-TIN. So they have to sign all the time, and they have to fill out a P-TIN. So filing paper returns on time. Look, if you go to prepare, you basically have to use electronic filing. It's our requirement. If we file a paper return, we have to come up with a big old reason as to why. Need more time? You can get extensions through California grants you an automatic extension to October 15th. The federals, the first one normally, an automatic 6-month extension. They actually don't, did they get rid of the one? Yeah, they did. They got rid of the one that was due in August. So it's just, oh no, wait. No extension requested for most taxpayers is April 15th, and the automatic extension is October 15th. See, that's the old man remembering. There used to be the first extension, which was, I believe, in August, and then the last one, which was October 15th. Then you had to have it done by October 15th. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. If you owe money beyond that, you owe. And, folks, if you owe money, getting an extension doesn't abate the taxes being paid in the interest. So, and if you fill out the extension form incorrectly or your estimate is way off, there can be some penalties in that too. Doesn't happen all the time, but the IRS can. So, I'm not going to talk about individuals if they're outside the United States. It's just, no, I'm not going to do that. But dependents. In the last few minutes, I'm going to talk about those. What is a dependent? Generally, you can claim your qualifying child or qualifying relative as a dependent. So there's a limitation on who could be your dependent. To have a Social Security number or a taxpayer ID number. So the term dependent means a qualifying child or a qualifying relative. If you have a housekeeper, maid, or servant, you can't claim them. Some people, I'm sure, have tried. Now, there's a real juicy credit for kids that are under 17, the child tax credit. You receive about $2,000. And depending on how much you earn, you can have earned income credit. But we're going to discuss that in Section 5, which that'll be in the January one. So this is an overview of the rules for claiming a dependent. This is just an overview. It's on page 26, Chapter 3 of the IRS Publication 17 Bible. You can't claim any dependents if you or your spouse could be claimed as a dependent by another taxpayer. So you can't claim someone if someone is claiming you. Doesn't work that way. You can't claim a married person who files a joint return as a dependent unless that joint return is filed only to claim a refund or withheld income or estimated tax paid. Yeah, they could be dependent, could be underage, and they had a job, and they're only filing to get the money. That's it. You can't claim a person as dependent unless that person is a U.S. citizen, U.S. resident alien, a U.S. national, or a resident of Canada or Mexico. And, of course, we get the first number one of the page. There is an exception for certain adopted children. So there's tests to be a qualifying child and a qualifying relative. These are the important ones. This is where you really need to pay attention. The child must be your son to be a qualifying child. The child must be your son, child, foster child, brother, sister, half-brother, half-sister, stepbrother, stepsister, or a descendant, or any of them. The child must be under age 19 at the end of the year and younger than you or your spouse, if filing jointly, under age 24 at the end of the year, a student and younger than you or your spouse, if filing jointly, or if any or of any age if permanently and totally disabled. Children that have autism are disabled. You need to make sure that you have proof if the IRS comes calling. They can and do. They usually don't. They can tell, is the other person working, have they filed, etc. Doesn't matter. The IRS can come calling anytime. Make sure you have that stuff for the disabled child. And, of course, if you have another disability, it's easy to prove if they're disabled. The third test is I just read the second one. The third one is the child must have lived with you for more than half a year. The child must not have provided more than half of his or her own support for the year. And the child must not be filing a joint return for the year unless that return is filed only to get a refund. If the child meets the rules to be a qualifying child of more than one person, only one person can actually treat the child as a qualifying child. This is kind of where head of household comes into play. That thing I was talking about earlier. But it's okay. To find out which person is the person entitled to claim a child as a qualifying child, you've got to see qualifying child of more than one person. It gets complex. You got to fight. But you got to fight by who has the child more and who provides more support. That's the reality. Who provides more support? I don't think we're going to get into custodial and non-custodial. Yeah. I'm not going to get into that. So, yeah. I think I did get those. The qualifying child relationship test, I mentioned that. The age test under age 19 and then age 24, basically a student, and or they're permanently and totally disabled at any time during the year, regardless of age. Now, under the age test, if your son turned 19 on December 10th, unless he was permanently and totally disabled or a student, he doesn't meet the age test because at the end of the year, he wasn't under age 19. Child must be younger than you or your spouse. To be a qualifying child, a child who isn't permanently and totally disabled must be younger than you. However, if you're married following jointly, the child must be younger than you or your spouse, but doesn't have to be younger than both of you. Things happen with adoptions. Older kids or older people can marry younger kids, and their child can be older than the new spouse. It happens. Welcome to America. So, there's a residency test. To meet the test, your child must have lived with you for more than half the year. There are exceptions for temporary absences, children who were born or died during the year, kidnapped children, and children of divorced or separated parents. Temporary absences, considered to have lived with you during periods of time when one of you or both are temporarily absent due to special circumstances such as illness, education, business, vacation, military service, or detention in a juvenile facility. Death or birth of a child. A child who was born or died during the year is treated as having lived for more than half the year if your home was the child's home for more than half the time he or she was alive during the year. The same is true if the child lived more than half the year except for any required hospital stay following birth. Child born alive, even if it's a day, an hour, even a few minutes, you can claim the child. There's a special step that you have to do. You used to have to file for the Social Security number. I don't believe you have to do that now, but correct me if I'm wrong. It's the last thing you want to talk about, but you need to speak to a professional on it. It's relatively easy to fix and to file. So it does happen. I've had that situation happen before. As a matter of fact, I have a client who now is my client because I knew that their child, I asked them when I had a moment, how was your child alive? She said, yes. How long? About 2 days. I said, okay. There's a quirk in the law. She didn't believe me. I told her there's a quirk in the law that says that you can claim the child. It's in the law. So I gave her the information, presented it. She went to the preparer. The preparer said, nah, that's not right. It's incorrect. That client is now my client. So go figure. I have to know the laws. I have to. Now, there's also support tests. Support tests are a little more complex, but basically you have to consider the entire household expenses. Lodging, food, utilities. Actually, even the amount of repairs is included. I didn't think about that one, but it is. Entertainment. Clothing, all that stuff to determine if you provide more than 50% of if you claim, you know, if the child lives with you, they're your kid, they're under 17, they don't have a job, no inheritance, no nothing, it's pretty safe to say they're going to be your dependent. But there are more items. They have to have a social security number and to file. And if you're going to claim a dependent that does not have a social security number, they need to get individual taxpayer identification number. We call it the I-10. They have to be here. They have to have their birth certificate and some sort of ID, anything, passport, whatever, but that passport, it kind of negates that. But anyway, generally, if you're here illegally, you still, under the law, you have to report. As I mentioned, if you earn a certain amount, you've got to file. Remember, Al Capone was sent to jail, not for his criminal acts, but, well, yeah, there was one criminal act. He didn't report his ill-gotten gains. So even criminal stuff has to be reported. I'm not saying that people who are here illegally are breaking the law, which they are, but the IRS acknowledges through laws enacted by Congress, they're here earning money, they have to report. And I have clients that do report. They are not here legally, but yet they are reporting. And they're never going to benefit, but they're still doing what they have to. And it drives people insane. And they say, I don't care if they're paid. You know what? I don't care if you don't care. They're obeying the law. They're contributing to the system, and they'll never benefit. Go figure. So there's other stuff, but we're now getting into income. I actually did get it in an hour. A lot happier with this episode. I want to thank you for everyone that tuned in, everyone who's watching it live, and who will be. You can always contact us, Jedi.tax. Give us a like on our YouTube page, please. Actually, subscribe to the page. We need you to, we got to get to 100. I want to thank everyone else. Special shout out to all of my clients and everyone out there. Be safe. There it is. There's the one he went. Blog Talk Radio. All right. We're going to be done pretty much now. So I want to thank you for joining me, and we'll see you guys on the other side. Hey, always.